Have you ever been to a really good buffet? I got one response. Izzy's? One of my favorite is, it's in Las Vegas. It's at the Rio. And, that's when you're, okay. Okay, apparently Mike has been there. We agree on this one. It's at the Rio. They have entire stations for different continents, different types of food. And the one that I like the best there, it's the seafood section. And they have this entire setup for seafood, and they have two different kinds of lobster, and you can eat as much lobster as you want. It's just great. Whenever I go to Vegas, when we go there for the trade shows and stuff, we usually make it a point to try to get there. And we usually make it early on the trip, because then you're never hungry again after that and stuff. It's a kind of restaurant that's good. A buffet is a restaurant that's good to go to when you have several people, quite a few people going, because they can always get whatever they want. You know, they've got the Mexican section or the Italian section or the American or the Chinese section, and people can pick and choose what they want to get. It's great for eating. The problem is you tend to eat too much because you want to make sure you're getting your money's worth, that you get all that you paid for. But you see, it doesn't work so well to take the buffet approach to our belief system. A lot of people think of religion as kind of a smorgasbord. They take a little of what Buddha had to say and a little bit of what Mahatma Gandhi had to say. Sprinkle over with some of what Jesus had to say there, what Jesus taught. Maybe some Scientology sauce right on top of it all. For dessert, they try some Dr. Phil and Dr. Laura with a dollop of Oprah on top of that. And if what you've assembled, what you've put together, if it tastes good, then you keep it. And they put together their own little buffet of life and their beliefs. The best part of that, though, is if you kind of lose taste for one part of it, you can just set it aside and go and try to find something else that you like. The only problem is that the Bible doesn't offer a buffet. God isn't a kind of buffet God. The Bible presents one God and only one way to be saved. Some people accept that as truth. Others don't like it so much. They want to set it aside. Find something else on the buffet that they can try. Something that is more palatable to them. Something that suits them better. Because you see, it is all a matter of perspective. Most of what we do in life comes down to our own perception of what's going on around us. Reminds me of a story of a lady who had a "Honk if you love Jesus" bumper sticker on the back of her car. And she was writing to a friend and she said, "What a wonderful experience I had. All because of that bumper sticker. I was sitting at a red light and I was lost in thought and I hardly even noticed that the light had changed. When the guy behind me spotted my bumper sticker, started honking like crazy. He must have really loved Jesus. And then he gave me some sort of funny one-fingered wave. I asked my kids who were sitting in the back seat what it meant, and they started giggling and they looked at each other. And they explained that it was some sort of Hawaiian good luck sign." Liz is shaking her head at me. Okay. So I turned around and I gave him the exact same wave. Well, pretty soon everyone was yelling and honking. I joined right in, honking and waving at them all. It was like a great big pep rally for Jesus. A couple of the people got so caught up in the joy of the Lord that they jumped out of their cars and they started to run toward my car. And I really wanted to wait and to pray with them. But I suddenly realized that the light was green. So I hit the gas pedal and I went right through the intersection. And you know what? It's a good thing I did, because I was the only car that made it across before the light turned red. As I drove away, I leaned out the window and I gave them a big Hawaiian good luck sign. What a wonderful experience I never knew that there were so many enthusiastic Christians out there on the road. You see, it is all a matter of perception. And as we continue our series in Luke, we'll be looking at Luke chapter 9, verses 18 through 20, in a message that is titled, Why Jesus? It is all about perception. And in Luke chapter 9, Jesus asked his disciples about the perceptions of the crowds who were following him around Galilee. And in verse 18, he says, Once, when Jesus was praying in private and his disciples were with him, he asked them, Who do the crowds say I am? His disciples, they didn't have to stop and think at all. They had heard the talk. They had heard the rumors. And verse 19 tells us, they replied, Some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, and still others that one of the prophets of long ago has come back to life. Some people thought that Jesus must have been some sort of reincarnation of John the Baptist. John was Jesus' cousin. For a few years, he preached a message, powerful sermons, as he wandered through the wilderness. But then John was executed by Herod. So some people believed that John the Baptist had reappeared in the form of Jesus. Others thought that he might have been one of the Old Testament prophets returning to show the way. See, there were all kinds of perceptions that were floating out there about who Jesus was. You know what? It's not a whole lot different for us today. There was recently a Jesus seminar. The scholars got together from different traditions and they debated the identity of Jesus of Nazareth. You see, some people see him as a wise man. Some as a sage or a guru. Some as a prophet or maybe a wizard. Some see Jesus as a philosopher. Some people think that Jesus is no more than a super nice guy. You know, like Richie Cunningham from the Happy Days? Whenever he's around you, you just kind of feel good. Some people see Jesus as some sort of a Greenpeace kind of guy. Long hair and sandals, protecting the environment and taking care of all of God's creatures. But what do the people that you see every week think about Jesus? Could you answer his question? Who do people say that I am? Has a subject come up at school or work? Or maybe even when you're out just talking with your neighbors. Who do people say that Jesus is? Anyone want to chime in? Son of God? Who do people say that Jesus is? Okay. All right. How about the bobblehead Jesus you might see in cars? Or t-shirts, Jesus is my homeboy? Okay. Okay. Yeah. So keep Jesus compartmentalized over in a section of stuff and don't really bring him up. Okay. Now, even more important than that first question of who do people say Jesus is, could you answer Jesus' next question? See, this question, it gets really personal. Jesus was saying, now you've told me what others have said about me. And then he goes to verse 20 and it says, but what about you? He asked, who do you say I am? See, when Jesus lived on earth, he made some very unique claims about who he is. In many different ways, Jesus said, to know me is to know God. To love me is to love God and To reject me is to reject God. In John 14, 6, it records this statement by Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. There are a lot of people who do not like the fact that Jesus claimed to be the only way. See, our all-American buffet mentality causes people to figure that all religions must be pretty much the same. People want to be able to pick and choose parts from any or maybe even all of them. But in reality, world religions teach some very different things. Hinduism. It claims that everything is God. Hindus can choose from literally millions of idols. Or they can worship an animal, or maybe even a tree if they want. Now, Buddhism, it rejects the belief in multiple gods, and it actually kind of goes the other way. Most branches of Buddhism are essentially non-theistic. You are basically your own God. And you are yourself. Now, Sikhism, it rejects both Hinduism and Buddhism, and it's willing to go to war over the differences. Islam is blatantly exclusive. In Islam, there is only one God. However, he is not Jehovah. There's a book out there called Every Wind of Doctrine, which will go through and it'll talk about all these different religions that are out there and what they actually believe. And some of these religions, they give Jesus a place. But all of them deny that he is God. Now, Jesus is distinctive because he is the only religious leader who claims to be God. Buddha doesn't claim to be God. Muhammad doesn't claim to be God. But Jesus claims to be God. Jesus, he backed up his claims with evidence that culminated in his resurrection from the dead. One kind of evidence that supports faith in Jesus is found in the prophecies of the Old Bible. Prophecies of the Bible, which is the Old Testament. Which was finished 400 years before Jesus' birth, his life, and his death, and then his resurrection. Now, Peter Stoner, who is a professor of science at Westmont College, he decided to calculate the probability that one person could fulfill just 8 of the over 456 prophecies that are made about the Messiah. Just 8 of them. The mathematical probability came out to 10 to the 17th power. 10 to the 17th power. I don't know about you, but I don't even know what 10 to the 17th power is. Except that it looks like what Tim has just put up here for you. 10 to the 17th power equals that number. Which, this is really cool. I didn't know what it was, so I looked it up on the internet stuff. And one said it was a sextillion. Dougie, help me out if you can hear anything. Another said it was a quintillion. And neither one of those really sounded right and stuff, so I kind of went through and did some stuff. It comes out to be, from what I can find out, the most reliable one, 100,000 trillion. That's what this is. 100,000 trillion. Or 10 to the 17th power. Let's put it this way. Tangible way. Suppose you take 10 to the 17th power of silver dollars and you spread them all over the state of Texas. They would be 2 feet deep. The entire state. You have to use a big state because it's a lot of silver dollars. And you go and you take one silver dollar and you mark it. And then you toss it in there, and somehow you're able to take all of those silver dollars and you mix them all up and spread them all up, and then they're spread out over the state 2 feet deep. And you take a man, and you blindfold him, and you release him at the edge of the border, and you say, go ahead, walk through there. And whenever you want, you just stop and pick up a silver dollar. If he pulled out that silver dollar that you had marked, that is the statistical probability that one human could fulfill just eight of those prophecies. Now, Stoner actually went, Professor Stoner went a little bit farther, and he said, well, what about 48 of the over 456? So that's about 10%. Tim, can you, there you go. That is the statistical probability of fulfilling just 48 of the over 456 prophecies about Jesus. That is 10 to the 157th power. And I counted all those zeros to make sure that they were right. I don't know what the number is for that. That is amazing. And Jesus, he fulfilled all of them, all of the prophecies of the Old Testament. See, Jesus, he stands alone in his claim, and the evidence and the prophecies, they support those claims. Now, Buddhism, it has a story that is similar to a story that Jesus told about the prodigal son. You remember the story? The son goes off and he squanders everything, and then he realizes that he's better off at his dad's house, so he decides to go home. And while he's a long way off, the father sees him and he runs out to greet him. And he wraps his arm around him, he gives him a kiss, and he puts a ring on his finger and a robe on his back, and he restores him. And he throws this great big party because his son has come home. Well, in the Buddha story, the father finds his wayward son, and he arranges for him to be given a menial job. And then through many years of working as a slave, the son eventually earns his way back into his father's good graces. See, that's the big difference between Christianity and other world religions. It's really simple. You study the religions of the world, and they all come down to one word. Do. What can you do to have religious success in life? What must you do to earn favor with God? All the religions of the world come back to the word do. Here's the difference. Christianity is all about done. It's about what Jesus Christ has already done for us. It's about God giving himself to us in the person of Jesus Christ. It's about him dying for our sins so that we can enter into a relationship, we can enter into salvation. It's not about what I must do to earn salvation, because there is absolutely nothing that I can do to earn salvation. It's about responding to what Jesus Christ has already done. And that's the huge difference. That's big. So Jesus, he asked, but what about you? Who do you say I am? And Peter answered, God's Messiah. The New American Standard says, you are the Christ of God. See, this was a cataclysmic statement. This was a major statement. See, Peter said, I don't need any more evidence. Jesus, I believe in you. You are the one. And you know what? I'm with Peter. I believe Jesus is who he said he is. He is the way, the truth, and the life. And he is the one, and I'm hedging my bet on him. I'm putting all my chips in his corner. I'm following him wherever he takes me. Now, some of you will remember Annie. And I loved her story, and some of you have heard it over and over again. When she was younger, help me if you can. I think she was about 17, and she would tell the story. And she had a vision or a dream, and it was with Jesus. And Jesus said, put your hand in my hand. Keep your eyes on me. Don't look to the left. Don't look to the right. And Annie, she lived her life for Jesus. All 104 years of it. Seven, six, we're somewhere in there. Annie lived her life for Jesus. And she would continually tell that story that she had. And right now, she is in heaven with Jesus. That is amazing. Why would we live all of our days focused on earthly things without even giving thought to what comes after death? If Jesus, if he was telling the truth, then it all comes down to how we answer his question. What about you? Who do you say I am? Who do you say that Jesus is? Anybody? Savior? Christ? The Alpha, the Omega, the Great I Am? He's the lover of my soul? He's everything. Anyone else? It's like a praise time right now when you can call out the names of who Jesus is. Comforter? A friend? The Great Counselor? The Lord of Lords? Healer? I'm only repeating because then it's on the tape what you guys have said. Imagine this. Imagine you're on the 15th floor of a skyscraper and it's burning. And you run out into a hallway. And you see that in this hallway, there are a lot of doors on both sides. And it's a long hallway. And you have no idea which door to open and you're trying to find the fire escape. You're going to have to try all those doors and hope that one of them leads you to that fire escape. But what happens if you open the wrong door and you get caught in a backdraft? Maybe you'll run out of time. You notice that the hallway is already beginning to fill with smoke, and so an urgency, a panic kind of sets in. And you reach out and you're ready to try the closest door to you. When you hear a voice that shouts, "Over here, this is the only way out, follow me." And you look up and you see it's a fireman, and he's actually holding the door open. Now, if you understand the reality of your situation, you'll pay attention. You're not going to say, "Well, who are you to tell me that's the only way out?" See, in your mind, you don't go and think, "Oh, this fireman's arrogant to claim that he knows the only way to get out of this place." You see, that fireman, he is risking his life to save yours. And if you have any sense at all, you will listen to him, you'll follow him through that door, and he'll take you down and out of the building to safety. See, that's how it is with Jesus. He did more than just risk his life for you. He gave his life. And he's speaking the truth with compassion when he says, "I am the way. If you want to be saved, follow me." So what about you? Who do you say that Jesus is?